Hey guys, welcome to my channel, 10 to Life. My name is Annie Elise, and I am bringing you full true crime cases in under 10 minutes. Ditching the boring storylines and empty plot information that really just drags out the case and giving you the key facts, the crazy details, and all of the insane twists and turns along the way. So if you like what you hear, please comment, share, like, review. And whether you're watching the video version of this on YouTube or listening to the podcast version, don't forget to subscribe to my channel by clicking that cute little subscribe button. If you have a major true crime addiction like me and you want more, head to my library for more cases, get your true crime fix. Don't forget to follow me on social at @AnnieElise. And thanks for coming. Let's get into the case. So today, rather than going through a current case, I actually want to throw back a little bit and go to one of the most notorious cases that we've had in what, I guess the last like decade and a half. And I'm sure you've heard about it because it is a household name, Jodi Arias. She is so crazy, like psychotic stage 5 clinger kind of notorious. I always thought that I knew the details until I really started researching and getting into the case, and like, holy shit, my mind was blown. So I'm here now to share that with you today. Okay, so let me throw it back. It's 2006 and Jodi is a 26-year-old blonde bombshell, beautiful, gorgeous, carefree, aspiring photographer. She meets Travis, who's 29 at the time. He's a motivational speaker, devout Mormon, and they meet at a convention in Las Vegas. They immediately hit it off, like I'm talking immediately hit it off, so much so that he invites her to his formal executive dinner for his company that night. Like, pretty serious stuff. They go to the dinner, they have a blast, they actually stay up talking all night until 4 a.m. the next day and just really were enamored with each other. Travis actually even told some of his friends that he felt like he found his wife. He was that excited about it. The problem was they were long distance. He lived in Mesa, Arizona at the time, and she lived in California. But what they did is whenever they could get together, they would try to meet at a middle ground at one of Travis's friends' house in Murrieta, California. When they weren't doing that, they were actually literally just traveling the country together. They were going on road trips, on hikes, on vacations, all over the place. Early on, their relationship became pretty sexual right out of the gate. It was hypersexual, they were always all over each other, they were just super passionate, and this was a problem for Travis because, as I mentioned, he was a devout Mormon and he really struggled with this because they don't believe in premarital sex. It really began to weigh on him, and he had several conversations with his friends because he felt like by having sex with Jodi, he was essentially taking the idea of marrying her off the table because she was no longer pure. It's so outdated, but you know, whatever. That's how he felt, to each his own. So as he continued struggling with this and they still had that sexual relationship, he was still, of course, practicing his faith. Well, Jodi decided she wanted to be baptized and become a Mormon herself. So she had Travis baptize her in the church, actually, which is just bizarre because they still had only recently met. She was already now taking on this entire new religion, which, if you know anything about the Mormon faith, it's, you know, it's pretty serious. It's not something that's super fleeting or, you know, casual. As I was saying, their relationship was hypersexual to where it started to make his friends really uncomfortable. They'd be in the hot tub together with a group of friends. She would be straddling him, kissing his neck, being just like super over the top and gross to where people are like, whoa. And at one point, Travis even said like, Jodi, get off of me. We're in front of our friends. Like, this is uncomfortable. At that time, she also started doing things that a jealous girlfriend would do. She started going through his phone. She started going through his emails. When he would go to the bathroom, she would literally listen in against the door like a freaking crazy person. His friends were increasingly, and rightfully so, getting pretty concerned about this. At one point, his friends decided, you know what, enough is enough, and we need to have an intervention. So they're having this intervention with him, and they're talking to him, expressing their concerns, and he's like, guys, no, Jodi's not like that. You don't understand her like I understand her. Like, I appreciate the concern, but really, you have nothing to worry about. Then the friends abruptly stopped talking and mouthed to him or whispered, we think she's behind the door listening. He's like, no, you guys are crazy. There's no way. What are you talking about? So they get up and sneak and just rip the door open to try to catch her. And sure enough, there is Jodi like this, ear to the door. And she was caught off guard. And apparently the look on her face, friends describe as just pure evil. So now, needless to say, Travis is on board and realizing, oh, okay, things might be a little bit off with this girl. Why is she literally clocking me every single place I go, even to the bathroom? Like, enough is enough. So after 5 months of dating, Travis broke up with Jodi. But here's what's so weird and where the stage 5 clinger begins. Weeks later, after Travis broke up with her, and remember, she's living in California now, she moves to Mesa, Arizona. Gets up and moves her whole life to Mesa, Arizona for this guy who just broke up with her. What? So once she's living in Mesa, Arizona, she actually would start showing up at Travis's house unannounced, like a crazy person. She had his garage door closed. She would often let herself in without even letting him know and just pop through the garage and be in his house. Other times she would just show up on his doorstep. It was crazy. One time she even snuck through the doggy door. Like, okay. If you're sneaking through the doggy door to see somebody, it's time to have a little bit of self-awareness and look at yourself in the mirror because that's a problem. Ladies, if you've ever done that, don't. Not cute. So when she was doing this and she was showing up unannounced, sometimes Travis was really mad and he's like, Jody, what the hell are you doing here? What's going on? But like I said, they had a very sexual relationship when they dated. So sometimes he would let her in and they would have sex. I think that a big piece of this is because he wasn't able to have sex with other women because he was struggling with his faith so much. So because he had already done it with her, it almost was an outlet. It didn't count. Meanwhile, while all of this is going on, Travis starts dating this woman named Lisa. He's crazy about her. She's also a Mormon. They have very strong feelings for each other. And this, of course, sets Jody off. She would show up at Lisa's house, knock on the door, run away in the middle of the night, knock on her windows, like just tapping from the outside. She even slashed her tires a couple times, like trying to do anything she could to scare Lisa off. Just kind of being like, no, that's my man. Like, get away from here. It's crazy. By April of 2008, after living in Mesa for about 8 months, she finally decides, I'm done. I'm moving back to California. Travis was super relieved, of course. But to no surprise, for some reason, he kept in contact with her and they even were having phone sex. So in May of 2008, the very next month, they actually get into a really big fight. It's still unclear what sparked the argument, but there's a chat log in his GChat account history and they got into a pretty heated argument. At one point, Travis says to Jody, you don't know what horror you have caused me. And she responds, it really wasn't my intention to hurt you. Later, he calls her a sociopath and says, you are the lowest of the low. Now, there's speculation that what caused this fight was that she was secretly recording these phone sex encounters, these messages, and that she threatened to take them to the bishop, which, remind you, he was already struggling with his faith and felt like he was, you know, going against the church. So now for her to go to his bishop when he's trying to be in the good graces and expose him saying, look, he's not really the true Mormon he's saying he is, that's pretty horrible to do to somebody. And I understand where he would be upset about that. Although it's also kind of his own behavior that caused it. The next month, he was planning to go to Cancun with some friends and with this new woman that he was seeing named Mimi. But on June 9th, 2008, after not hearing from Travis for 5 days, friends started to become concerned. Travis's roommate goes to check on him in his room, and what he finds is a complete horror scene. There was a huge puddle of blood on the carpet. There was blood on the walls in the entire hallway leading to the bathroom, blood all over the sink, and then in the shower, there was Travis crumpled in a ball, soaked in blood, and he called 911. Police came and the first thing they said was, whoa, there was a major struggle here. This was clearly a very deeply personal crime. There is so much blood everywhere. The manner in which he was killed was horrifying. Travis was stabbed 27 times. He was shot in the head, grazed his brain, and his throat was slit under the chin, ear to ear. Police are saying that there was a major struggle here and somebody clearly wanted Travis dead. When police talked to the friends to ask for information about who could have done such a horrible crime, they warned them about Jody. They said, Travis was dating this woman who was a stalker, who had all sorts of odd behavior. There is no doubt in our mind that Jody is behind this. When police finally get in touch with Jody, she denies ever being in Arizona. She says, no, what are you talking about? I was actually driving to Utah to visit this new guy that I'm seeing. When they speak to this new guy that she's dating, he confirms, but he says, she arrived really late, and when I was calling her the day she was supposed to arrive, which was the day Travis was killed, it kept going to voicemail. Also, something that he said was very interesting is when she showed up on his doorstep, she was suddenly a brunette. So police are investigating this crime scene, right? They are analyzing all of the blood, trying to look for any DNA, all sorts of evidence. They find a bloody palm print. They find brown hair stuck in a pile of blood. And as they're going through the house, by chance, they decided to look in the washing machine, which is not normally the first place you would look for evidence. But it's so good they did because they found all of the bed linens and crumpled inside between the sheets was a camera. They hoped that they could recover something on the camera, but because of the water damage, it was really unlikely. Well, as luck would have it, the memory card was not damaged. They found photos that were timestamped with the day Travis died, and sure enough, Jody was in those photos. Dirty, naked photos of each other in bed. Then you see the scene move to the bathroom and into the shower, and she starts taking these really odd naked portraits of Travis in the shower with this really serious look on his face behind the water. Then you see crime scene photos. I mean, you are a moron. First of all, if you're taking pictures and trying to say you weren't even there, why don't you take the camera with you, dispose of it somewhere else? Don't throw it in the washing machine and take the chance that it's gonna just be done and fried. Come on, are you an idiot? During the investigation, before Jody's confronted, police also learned that the handgun that was used to shoot Travis was the same handgun reported stolen from a robbery that took place at Jody's grandparents' house a few months prior. All signs point to Jody. There is no way it's anybody else. Let's get her in here and talk to her. So she agrees to come in and speak with police and denies, again, ever being there, having any part of it. She's just denial, denial, denial. They bring all the evidence in front of her. They talk about the gun. They talk about the photos. And she still is just stone-faced saying, no, I wasn't there. And at one point, she's even crying to them saying, how many times did they stab him? Oh my God, this isn't fair. It's like, you are a sociopath. So the officers decide, you know what, we're gonna leave the room. We're gonna just watch her on this camera, see if we can get any weird footage that really indicates that she's guilty or if she slips up and says something. Let's just watch her behavior. So they leave the room and the behavior is truly insane. She's doing headstands. She's digging through the garbage, looking in the trash. She starts singing a freaking Dido song. Like, I can't. So the officers come back in and they basically are like, look, Jody, we get it. You're not admitting to anything. Here's the evidence. We're arresting you. And boom, Jody's arrested. The next day, she admits to being at Travis's house. Her story is that two masked intruders came into Travis's house and threatened her that if she told anyone, she would kill her family. Police aren't buying it because obviously who in their right mind would? Then she changes her story again, saying that it was in self-defense, that Travis was abusive. And when that didn't feel like a strong enough argument, she then decides to just go for the gut punch. And she said, I caught him masturbating to child pornography. And when he caught me seeing him do that, he exploded and tried to attack me. So I was defending myself. That is a blatant lie. Like, at this point, your credibility is just shot. So quit embarrassing yourself. Seriously. So after the investigation is complete and they gather all of their evidence, here is what happened. Jody was on the way to Utah to see this new guy that she was dating, but she showed up at Travis's doorstep first, and Travis, being the nice guy that he is, let her in. Of course, their relationship was always sexual, so they start having sex, she's taking pictures, they're playing, they move to the shower, and then Jody attacks him. She stabs him 27 times, she slits his throat all the way under here, ear to ear, and shoots him in the head, grazing his brain. So now we go to trial. She is on trial for the murder. She's still holding on to this abusive story, trying to justify her reasons for killing him. The trial is just insane. I mean, they play all sorts of the audio recordings of them having bone sex. They show the pictures. I mean, it is truly a media frenzy. Jody's takes the stand just in tears, doe-eyed, poor me, oh my God, I'm so sorry. What's interesting too is we all know she was this blonde bombshell, beautiful, would always use her sexuality to lure men in and to kind of get her way and get what she wants. But when she went to trial, she was a brunette at this point. She also pops on glasses. She's sitting next to her defense attorney, who is, I think, she was 5'2", which Jody's like 5'7". She slumps down in her chair to look shorter than her 5'2 defense attorney, to look weak to the judge and to the jury. It is so calculated, which props to your defense attorney because they're obviously super smart, but like, nobody's buying it. The trial continues, the show continues, I should say, and Jody Arias is finally convicted of first degree murder and sentenced to life in prison. So thank you for tuning in to another episode of 10 to Life. If you liked what you heard, like the video, please subscribe to my channel, like, share, comment, love to hear your feedback. And until next time, have a good one. Bye.